Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is A Vague Idea. It's a comedy game show podcast. I'm Nate Regolia. Each week, we subject our guests to a list of topics to find out if they have a vague idea. And this week, we're going to be talking not about a mispronounced collection of German hot dogs. We are, in fact, instead talking about an 80s acting gang. We're talking about the Brat Pack. And to do so, we have two fantastic returning guests. They have recently faced off on this very program, and then we'll face off again right now. I will introduce one guest first because she was the impetus for this episode. She suggested this after listening to our Clueless episode, and so we'll see if she is clueful about the Brat Pack. It's Monica Morris. Monica, welcome back.
Thank you. I am like super excited about this. I love the Brat Pack. I'm so excited. So
What about the Brat Pack does it for you? What's your big
vibe? I mean, it's a childhood nostalgia, right? I mean, I remember just watching those movies over and over, like when I didn't understand what they meant, right? Because I was only like a child. But oh, I remember watching those movies over and over and just loving them. And some of them hold up. Like, I feel like some of them hold up. Not all of them. Some of them do. So.
Yeah. Well, right on. I agree. I think it's one of those beautiful, like, they all really speak to our childhoods, if not everyone's. I wonder how universal they are now.
No.
And whether or not they are. It's probably just like that one time that we caught that one show on TV, and now whenever we see it again, we're like, oh, I feel good about that.
We found it on TBS one late night, just like flipping through channels.
That's how
kids nowadays know about the Brat Pack.
Right, because they're all vaping and TikToking and things. They don't know about that. Well, welcome back, Monica.
Thank you.
Facing off against Monica is a man who is known in some Spanish-speaking nation as the Il Fume de Mor. I don't think that's even Spanish. I don't know what I'm doing. But the Smoke of Love. He's also known as the Velvet Fog of Denver. It's Dave DeNovelis. Dave, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Nate.
Yeah.
And it's good to see you, Monica.
Literally
excited about this.
Yeah. And I'm literally excited to try to kick your ass because you're the only person who beat me. So I'm ready for a rematch.
Well, you mess with the bull, you get the horns.
And your horns are well known and highly spoken of. Yeah. Oh, there they are. Listener, don't worry about it. They were horns. It's fine. So Dave, any feelings about the Brat Pack? Anything about them that just speaks to you?
No, very much. So the nostalgia kick, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. All that. Plus the seeing them evolve in their careers or disappear completely and show up as other actors that are very removed from those days. But I don't know. I like them all. I like the movies. I like the, you know, the aura of celebrity that came with them, and, you know, kind of a bygone kind of era. I'm sure there's like celebrities that were like thought of like that now, like the BTS kids and shit like that. But, you know, it was like, ooh, those people are cool.
But it's different because the Brat Pack was part of like a monoculture that was the last one to exist.
Right.
In human history, as far as we know. I mean, we'll surely blow ourselves up and then we'll have one story that we tell about recovering from the explosion. But yeah, it's interesting because everybody knew about them.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think Zendaya and Tom Holland have like a click. I mean, it's not the same thing, right? I mean, you know who they are, but they're not like... They're not in all the movies together.
Yeah, well, and even like the Pussy Posse, right? Like Leonardo DiCaprio and Tobey Maguire and those guys, like that never took off as a thing. I mean, we were all kind of aware that was like they partied together and called themselves that, but it wasn't like, oh, this is what we put on the cover of People magazine. I mean, for obvious reasons, but it just didn't connect that way anymore. So yeah.
Yeah.
We're going back in time together, shall we?
Yeah.
Back to a delicate era known as the 1980s. And for the opening question, we are instead going to play everyone's favorite game, We're going to play I See What You Did There.
I see what you did there. I saw that in the Clueless episode. That was fucking hard.
Let's jump into number one. Monica, you get to go first since this is your selected theme.
Okay.
So you are going to be giving me the name of a Brat Pack member that I'm mashing up with something else.
Okay.
All right. Number one, this country singer saw the light by which a Bender actor got busy with Princess Claire Standish.
Princess Claire Standish? Oh, gosh. Country singer. Oh, I have no idea. See, this is, I see this is why this was so hard. This is the hardest part of like the Clueless episode. I have no idea.
You'll see what I did there though. Dave, do you have a guess?
I will.
I'm going to try, see if I get this one. So I need to name a country singer, right?
Yes, a country singer mashed up with a Brat Pack member name.
Yeah, so that would be Winona Judd Nelson.
You are correct.
Oh, yeah!
Very good, Dave. Very good.
Or Naomi.
It is Winona Judd. She had the song, I Saw the Light.
Oh, then, yeah.
Referenced in the clue.
Never mind me.
So, yeah, that was correct. Very good. So, Monica, you get number two. This is exciting. We're just gonna keep rolling.
Okay.
Keep rolling with this. So number two, if Sam Seaborn of the West Wing is feeling fatigued, depressed, and suffering from erectile dysfunction, he might be played by this Brat Pack member. Dave's got it already. I can tell. Dave is laughing like a person who sees what I did there.
He might be plagued by this Brat Pack member. Let me see. Can you repeat the clue one more time?
Yeah. So if Sam Seaborn of the West Wing is feeling fatigued, depressed, and suffering from erectile dysfunction, he might be played by this Brat Pack member.
Oh. I want to say like Rob Lowe testosterone, but it's probably...
I'm going to give it to you. Yeah. I was looking for Rob Lowe T.
Yeah.
Lowe T being an off-youth internet insult. Yeah. But yeah, having low testosterone can result in fatigue, depression, and erectile dysfunction, as can watching The West Wing.
I heard the oddest ad for like low T, some clinic, and they're like, acoustasonic treatment for your low T. You can have sex at night. And all I'm thinking about is just like jock jams for your sad, limp dick.
Yeah, like you just put a woofer on your crotch, and then you're like, okay, I guess I'll get there eventually.
There it is. You can do it, little buddy. You can do it.
Like, maybe they're just playing porn directly to your dick. Like,
It's like those old tapes you could buy that would be like learn, you know, stop smoking subliminally.
Yeah, osmosis. Right. I was like learning through osmosis.
So yeah, Monica, you get a point on that. Great job. Number three, Dave.
All right.
And I think Monica would definitely get this. So Dave, I hope you get this one. Who needs private eyes when pairing this dead zone star with some blue-eyed soul? I'll read it again. Who needs private eyes when pairing this dead zone star with some blue-eyed soul?
Well, I'm going to say they're watching me.
Yeah.
Anthony Michael Hall and Oates.
That is correct. Very good. Very good.
This is fun.
I love it.
Did you see what I did there?
I saw what you did there.
All right, Monica, here's number four. Ooh. He will ferret out the commies using this public forum, even among store displays, come to life.
Oh, okay. It's Andrew McMahon? Like... Andrew McCarthy and Mannequin. I don't know how.
You're close. You got the Andrew McCarthy part. I like that. I like where you're going. Let me read it one more time. I'll give you one more shot at this, and we're going to pass the day.
Okay.
He will ferret out the commies using this public forum, even among store displays come to life.
Oh, store. Public forum. Oh, gosh. Oh, is it? It's like Andrew McCarthy, Red Dawn, and Mannequin. I don't know how they all go.
All right, you're really close. But Dave, I think Dave knows.
I don't know if I know it. I know. So I got Andrew McCarthy and the House of Un-American Activities. Hearings.
Yeah. Andrew McCarthy hearings was what I was going for. Andrew McCarthy hearings. I'm going to give you each a point because you both got close. You got there together. And that's what matters.
That's fucking teamwork.
Yeah. All right. Let's jump into round number one. Dave, do you have a vague idea about the Breakfast Club?
Darn right. I got a vague idea about the Breakfast Club.
All right. Tell us about it. Talk about the Breakfast Club.
So the Breakfast Club, John Hughes flick from 1985. Also one of the two movies that is considered the start of the Brat Pack because they were all in there together. So the movie itself, if you haven't seen, it's very good. It's about Saturday detention with a bunch of and a mix of high school students having to spend the whole day together. You got the jocks, the dweebs, the weirdos, the burnouts, the dropouts, and they have to come together and get through a day of detention. Meanwhile, being harassed endlessly by the principal, the total tool, his name I can't remember yet, Carl the janitor is kind of keeping it all together. But let's see, who was in that though? There was we had Judd Nelson, Anthony Michael Hall, Emilio Estevez, Molly Ringwald, Ally Sheedy. I think that might be it. Maybe there's more. I don't know. That's what I know about The Breakfast Club.
Very good. Very good. Monica, what can you add?
The Carl the janitor goes through your lockers. He's got the key to all of your lockers. Brian, AKA Anthony Michael Hall, knows him. Molly Ringwald, the popular girl, Judd Nelson, the hot stoner bad boy. They're in a library. They fuck that library up, honestly.
They
rip out books. They smoke weed. They put Judd Nelson put weed down Anthony Michael Hall's pants. Of course, Claire falls for the bad boy, Molly Ringwald. Milo Estevez falls for Ally Sheedy. And poor Brian is left out, obviously, in the cold with no sex, with no nobody.
But he's got his brains, so.
But he's got his brains.
That's going to work out.
Yeah. But Ally Sheedy had no reason to be there. She was just bored on a Saturday. She had legit no reason. Anthony Michael Hall, Judd Nelson had another 8 weeks of detention because he was had some great music. One of the best soundtracks of any movie ever. And I always whistle that song when they sing, when they're all bored. One of the best soundtracks ever.
It's true. That soundtrack features obviously the Simple Minds track, Don't You Forget About Me.
Hey.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic movie, right? A fantastic movie about everybody kind of being the same, even though you have different backgrounds. It's a very like 80s after school special vibe without having that cloying nonsense to it.
Yeah.
And it's imminently rewatchable. I could probably watch it once a year and never be bored with it. It's always fun and goofy. You've got synchronized dancing sequences. Yeah. You have just all sorts of nonsense. It's like, it is peak John Hughes work.
It is peak white people dancing, which is really bad.
Also
true. Oh,
yeah.
I think that, as we were talking earlier, I think that one might hold up.
That's one of the only ones that holds up. Yeah.
Kids today can watch it and be like, hey, that was actually kind of cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it leaves you with a message that has some value to it so that it doesn't end the way that, say, other John Hughes movies end, where it's like, just dump your current girlfriend with whoever will sleep with her and go off with the person you want to date now. Breakfast Club came out in 1985. All the people you listed were absolutely correct. The principal Vernon is played by Paul Gleason, who's a great, great character actor.
Great in everything.
And this movie cost $1 million to make in 1985 money. Do either of you have a guess for how much money it made at the box office?
I'm going to say over $100 million at the box office.
Okay. Monica, what do you think?
I'll go with like $65
million. It made $51 million at the box office, which, I mean, isn't that much, but it's still 50 times its money. That's kind of crazy.
I mean, it made its money back. People got rich on that.
And considering it's effectively a bottle episode of a movie, you're spending an hour and a half in one room for the most part, single set,
right,
and just a bunch of kids acting
right
like kids.
Right high school, and it's, as all John Hughes movies, it was set in Illinois.
Yes,
right up in Chicago.
It's true. Yeah. Got to be in those Chicago burbs. It's where the real America's happening. Apparently,
burbs
in the 80s.
America.
Great job. I'm gonna give you each 2 points.
Yes.
And we're gonna hop into round number 3. So, Monica, do you have a vague idea about 16 candles?
Oh, my God, do I have a vague idea about 16 candles. Okay, so Molly Ringwald, it's her birthday. It's also the date of her sister's wedding. So she wakes up, everybody's forgotten her birthday. Nobody cares. It's the day before her sister's wedding, the night before her sister's wedding. Nobody cares about her birthday. So she goes to school. She's obsessed with Jake Ryan. She gets invited to a party. There's some really racist long dong silver guy. He's like the most racist character in any movie. Who is he played by? I want to say BD Wong, but it's not him. But yeah, it was like he was kind of famous like in the 80s and 90s, like one of the only Asian American actors that was like famous at the time. And he falls in love with this like really tall, like German woman. He's like, what's happening? Oh, stuff. Awful, awful racist movie.
Yeah.
there's also some rapey scenes in there because Anthony Michael Hall's in there. And he like steals Molly Ringwald's panties, you know, to show everybody that he's like, you know, like a cool guy.
He's got high tea and he's sexually
active. Exactly. So she goes to a party at Jake Ryan's house, and Jake Ryan's got this like, you know, really fancy girlfriend who ends up with Anthony Michael Hall because Anthony Michael Hall kind of like legit like date rapes her because she's drunk. This is one movie that does not, this is a movie that does not hold up.
I believe the kids call it problematic.
Yes.
Problematic. Deeply. It is deeply problematic. So the next day, after the drunkenness of the night before, the next day the sister gets married, but she's so drunk, she's and high on drugs, she pukes at the altar. But then Molly Ringwald leaves the wedding, and Jake Ryan is there in his fancy like Corvette or something like that, and he drives her to her house, and so this cake, and then like that's the iconic scene. They're both on top of the dining room table, which like why? But they're on top of the dining room table. There's a candle, and they make out, and she gets the guy of her dreams. I think it's the after party for homecoming or something like that. But anyway. I love that movie. So problematic.
Very.
And nobody ever saw Jake Ryan again because I think that was the only movie he made.
Yeah. There's a couple more, but I'll talk about those later. Dave, anything to add?
I mean, Monica, you pretty much wrapped it up there. It's like, it's a heartwarming story with some rape undertones.
Yeah. So rapey.
And I was always like watching it as I think in my, you know, early adulthood and all that, moving past the teen phase and all that, I was like, man, Molly Ringwald's character, it's like, got to make it all about you on the sister's wedding day, huh? Oh my goodness. I get it. I get that, you know, you might feel a little overshadowed, but bring that up on the next day.
It's her 16th birthday though.
But it's so important, as we've learned from MTV's Sweet 16, right? Those people are awful.
Oh yeah.
Also John Cusack, I don't know if that was his first movie, but he's also like the dweeb in the movie with Anthony Michael Hall.
He's so good in all those.
Mm-hmm. Although not official Brat Pack member, but he was in the movie.
It's true. yeah, very good. Very good, both of you. So Michael Scheffling played Jake Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
He also appeared in Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken, Vision Quest, Mermaids, and Sylvester. So he was in a few more movies, but yeah, really? Certainly didn't achieve the hunk status that he was sort of bandied to be by the film.
I don't think he wanted to be either. I think they did. And he's like, I didn't really like Hollywood, but
he was a true auteur.
Yes.
I have a message and I'm not going to be able to tell it through films like Vision Quest.
Vision Quest was a good movie. Come on.
I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I'm just saying if you're trying to like make a statement, it's not the movie to make a statement in. It's Vision Quest. Getty Watanabe is the actor who played Long Duck Dong, who is, yeah, definitely one of the most resounding, especially because in 16 Candles, I believe all the adults refer to him alternating as Chinese or Japanese or whatever. They literally don't even care where he's from. Yeah. We're at a point where you can make regionalism based jokes.
Yeah.
At the time of this film,
the grandparents or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like a foreign exchange student that's just hanging out, and then people get saddled with him, and that's sort of the deal. But yeah, great movie otherwise in a lot of ways. I mean, other than as I noted earlier, Jake Ryan's girlfriend Caroline is passed out drunk in the front seat of Jake Ryan's car, and when he realizes he wants to go hang out with Molly Ringwald, he's like, "Hey, Anthony Michael Hall, just take this one and go ahead." And of course, Anthony Michael Hall, you can have her. And then he's like, "Great, I'll drive away with this intoxicated and passed out lady, and I'll do whatever I want to her because it's 1984."
Shameful.
So bad.
It's classic American cinema, though. You gotta, you know.
I love it so much.
It is. It's a real. It's cotton candy, right? It comes on, you watch. You're like, oh, that was a fun.
Yeah.
It's a TNT afternoon thing. When it comes up, you're like, I'm gonna watch the rest of this. Doesn't matter where it came in. I'm gonna see this through.
It's honestly like, this is a bad comparison, but there are ways in which it is similar to listening to your grandparent tell you the same story over and over again, where you're like, yeah, I've already heard this before. I know where the racist parts are going to come in. I know that this is not going to be a good experience, but I'm just going to sit and listen because it's kind of comforting to be around this old thing. Like, that's it. So great job. Monica, 2 points. Dave, 1 point. Yeah, Dave, sorry. It's just she did the DVD commentary for the entire film, and then you had, picking up the pieces.
Yeah, Criterion Collection shit right there.
We should do that. We should contact the Criterion Collection people and get Monica to do special DLC DVD commentaries on these
movies. I like it. Yes. I like it.
I think it's only right. Mm-hmm. Let's play our first game that isn't I See What You Did There. We're going to play The Thunderdome.
Ooh.
All right. This week in the Thunderdome, it is a battle between near brats. These are people who have been in Brat Pack movies, but they aren't actually Brat Pack members themselves. And they just so happen to have already fought each other in the second Avengers movie, because this is a battle between Robert Downey Jr. and James Spader.
Ooh.
So I ask you, who wins in a battle to the death in the Thunderdome? Dave, what do you think?
Oh, man. So, Battle of the Death between Robert Downey Jr. and James Spader, that's a tough one. A lot of folks are going to say Robert Downey Jr. because of Iron Man, but I'm going to go with James Spader because of the collection of work throughout the years, right? So being a near Brat Pack member to becoming, Robert California on The Office to, what is it, the Blacklist, is that the one where he's just the creepy CIA dude? No, I think... Robert Downey Jr. is too showy. And the showy ones at the end never prevail. James Spader seems very, very sneaky.
Mm-hmm.
And if we've ever, he's capable of enduring and making people endure some horrific shit if you've ever seen Secretary. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Those are my favorite movies.
That's a good one. I know it is. I know. So I'm gonna go with James Spader just because I'll never be as cool as Robert Downey Jr., but I think I can have like some of the gravitas of James Spader.
Okay. One in the column for Spader. Monica, what do you think? Is it Robert Downey Jr. or Spader?
I was hoping they would go with James Spader with Robert Downey Jr. because I love James Spader. I loved him as the asshole in 16 Candles. I loved him on Private Practice. I loved him in Secretary. I love James and Less Than Zero. I love
Boston Legal. Boston mm-hmm. Legal, he was Legal, fun.
Yeah. Yeah, he started on Private Practice and then it turned to Boston Legal. He took over. I love James Spader. Okay, but just to be a little bit different, I will go with Robert Downey Jr. Not because of Iron Man, but because James Spader was a hardcore addict in the 90s, and I think he learned some survival skills. Being like on the street, breaking into people's houses and shit like that. And I think he, you know, he's low key scrappy. So, but James Spader is super sneaky. But I also think that like Robert Downey Jr. is all like, I space down like drug dealers who try to shake me for my money, you know, because I was like super famous in the 90s. And so I'm going to go with Robert Downey Jr.
I mean, that's a good point. Didn't he wake up in like some like 8-year-old bed on a bender and like got arrested for that? Yeah, that's wild.
And he was in jail twice. So, and not just like, oh, let's send you to rehab. He was in actual jail for several months.
Is not it like possible? 25 jail.
Yeah. 25 jail.
Jail.
Jail, jail.
Is it possible that Robert Downey Jr. is the like impetus for BoJack Horseman? Like,
oh wow,
kind of a similar situation. I think you're both absolutely correct. I was gonna say that, I mean, Spader seems like the obvious win precisely because he has somehow avoided taking really bad job, like bad acting jobs. And Robert Downey Jr. seems to like, I mean, granted, he's cashing checks, so there's no bad acting job in cashing checks, but Robert Downey Jr. takes roles that are not good. Like, oh, not yeah. good movies that end up being horrible movies. But he also has like an alpaca farm, I think, if we've all seen the David Letterman Netflix show. There's an episode with Robert Downey Jr. where he walks Dave around.
Right?
He's just like, I don't know. I don't actually take care
of this. Like, that was a hard comeback from like being so fucking drug addled and like in jail twice. To Iron Man, that's quite the trajectory.
Yeah, it's insane because, you know, it would have looked like he was going to be Morton Downey Jr. with the amount people weren't going to like him. And then it turned out, no, he's actually like, he's America's sweetheart. Like, he's someone that everybody goes, wow, what a guy. Mm-hmm. Even though totally bombs on that like 85 season of SNL that Anthony awesome. Michael Hall is also on.
Also, that was the worst SNL season ever.
Yeah. Never. Yeah, real weird, but also like, I mean, he's incredibly talented. He's very funny. He's good at drama. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a real toss up. The other end is Spader has a Dave DeNovelis esque voice that is hypnotic and
so
just like
not.
Yeah, he's got a great voice. He is just plain compelling in everything you see him in because he can. He plays the perfect asshole in 16 Candles. He also can play. The most admirable doofus, or he can play just like this amalgam of both in Robert California, right? But he can do all of it. He can run the gamut. So yeah, it's a tough call. I'm gonna give you each 2 points because the Thunderdome just, I guess they just hug at the end of this fight. They're like, yeah, we both did.
That's
good.
That's my kind of fight to the death right there. Let's just hug it out together. Just
hug it out.
Go get some French fries.
We should start a fighting league it's on pay-per-view. There's an octagon. I guess we'd have to get another shape. Maybe it's a septagon. But basically, you just go out there and it's just a couple of guys really just hug it out.
Wrestle it out for a couple minutes and then be like, come here, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. We proved our point.
You didn't have to swing. That's ridiculous.
I'll take the trash out every other Tuesday. Okay. We're good. Hugs. It's a great job on the Thunderdome. Let's jump into round number 3. Monica, do you have a vague idea about the already mentioned John Hughes?
Oh my God. John Hughes was the shit in the 80s. Wrote and directed so many popular teen movies all set in Chicago or the Chicago suburbs. So he did The Breakfast Club, he did Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which introduced us to Matthew Broderick and Jennifer Grey. And he like different than Chris Columbus, because I kind of lump them all, like him and Chris Columbus in the same, John Hughes in this kind of the same genre, and they like to direct like younger kids movies. But like he was like the voice of a generation, and so he really brought that Midwest, you know, white culture to the forefront.
Somebody had to after hundreds of years of being in the darkness. So
yeah, I know, right? Because you know, white people weren't important enough.
Just always on the back burner.
We had forgotten about. But he wrote and directed some of the like seminal movies of the 80s and 90s. I can't remember if he died or not. I feel like he died of like cancer, like in the 2000s, I think. But he's got an enduring legacy of capturing teen angst and putting it on screen. So John Hughes, great director.
Very good. Dave, anything you can add about John Hughes?
Once again, Monica nailed it there, but it's like, there's always money in capturing teen angst, isn't there?
Always.
Oh man, yeah. Every generation, it's like, that's the thing. And you said it right. It was like that, the zeitgeist of it. It was like every kid seemed to be able to relate to whatever John Hughes put out there.
Put out a movie every year.
It seemed like it was like, and then I was thinking about him just a while back. I'm like, and then it just stopped, right? And then John Hughes just stopped. And I don't know why. I got to look into it. Maybe somebody knows, but.
I think he got cancer and died.
Well, but I think that there was like a thing where it's like he stopped making movies. Yeah. And then people were like, oh yeah. A couple decades later, a decade and a half, they're like, oh yeah, John Hughes, the guy that made all those movies you fucking love, dead.
He is dead, in fact. That is true. He had a heart attack in 2009.
Oh, there you go, Monica. You knew, you nailed it.
I think what's interesting about John Hughes is he's sort of this, he's able to popularize calling bullshit on all the stuff that's screwed up with American society. All the contradictions that everybody notices when they're growing up, right? The fact that we all get to a certain age and we go, wait, all these people who say they're authorities don't actually know anything, and they don't actually get me, and they don't want to get me. And so that's confusing. It really, he perfectly tied into sort of a baby boomer era system of thinking about your place in the world, right? Which is like, well, I'm supposed to be allowed to be whoever I want to be, but nobody will let me do that. So I'm going to write movie after movie that really is about kids doing that thing, which is saying, oh, you guys don't know what you're talking about. I know as well as you do. Stop pigeonholing me. Don't put me in a corner. All this stuff. Like, let me be who I am. So it's a very like, on two hands, like it's a very positive and a very complicatedly negative sort of thing to propagate, especially in the 80s when economically speaking, we're also saying like, hey, do whatever you want. It's your money. Fuck other people. If they don't have it, they're probably bad people. And you have this sort of competing philosophy going on. But I feel like he almost taps into like the notes that say Joseph Heller or Vonnegut or even Shakespeare were talking about, right? Where they're all saying, the organization that we put around this stuff just doesn't make any sense. We're a destructive race of people. We're a destructive creature, and it doesn't make sense what we do. But this was just a way to package that for teenagers to get them at the most sort of hungry and vulnerable point in the best way, right?
Yeah.
As that woman said in Clueless, at their most fecund point.
Yes, they're so fecund. so he started writing essays and stories for National Lampoon magazine.
Oh yeah.
Oh, good.
And his writing credits for film include National Lampoon's Vacation.
Yes.
National Lampoon's European Vacation. Also Christmas good. Vacation.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Mr. Mom.
Oh, love that one. Yeah. Keaton
in his funny prime.
Oh God, he's so good.
16 Candles, Weird Science, The Breakfast Club, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Pretty in Pink, Some Kind of Wonderful, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, She's Having a Baby, Uncle Buck, Dutch, Dennis the Menace, Baby's Day Out, The Beethoven Franchise.
Get out! Charles Grodin's great in those.
He is. The first Charles Grodin really just fell off too, and it was too bad because he was great.
Oh, he's amazing.
And then he also co-wrote Home Alone, Home Alone 2, and Home Alone 3, which Chris Columbus directed. To look at this, just this high-profile thing, where you're like, from 1983 until 1997, this guy has a movie or two come out every year. And they're all bangers. Like, it's all stuff that we would go...
Yes, it's all watching that movie.
I dragged my parents to the movie theater to see that movie, and that was just this guy. It's insane.
You didn't name one movie I haven't seen.
Not one. It's insane. I mean, I'm going to look at his further filmography to see if there's really anything that we can pick apart. But I bet we can.
Yeah, I'm not going to. I'm going to let that guy have his flowers.
Yeah, have your day. I guess he also wrote the Miracle on 34th Street remake that came out in 94. He had some sort of participation in Mallrats, the Kevin Smith film.
Yeah.
Which is one of the better ones he did.
Yeah, really uncomfortable place.
Yeah, backseat of a Volkswagen, my friend. Made in Manhattan, Just Visiting, Newport South, Drillbit Taylor, I think was the last thing that he participated, that he was like major in. He
wrote Owen Drillbit Wilson, Taylor. Right? Yep. Owen Wilson, yep. That way to go out on a high note, friend.
Wow. So,
yeah. Pretty wild stuff. And just kind of, you know, it's tragic because he's only 59 when he dies.
That's too young.
Extraordinarily young. And considering like Hollywood, he could have easily produced films for another 10, 20 years without a problem. But we lost him. So great job. 2 points each on John Hughes.
I love that guy. Good for him.
It is good for him. I wish we could all have that kind of even just to lick at the delicate flames of that kind of success.
Right. It burns.
It does taste like burning. Dave, round number 4.
Yes.
Do you have a vague idea about Mayor Winningham?
Incredibly vague.
All right.
Not a horse.
That's correct. Not a horse. Anything to add other than not a horse?
All I know is like she was in, I believe, St. Elmo's Fire.
You are correct. It's very good.
In any of the other ones.
Yep, she was in St. Elmo's Fire.
Yeah, that's about all I know about Mayor Winningham.
All right. Monica, anything to add about Mayor Winningham?
Mayor Winningham, the cute little, she was in St. Elmo's Fire. She's had a very successful career as a character actress. She's born and raised in California.
Oh.
Went to high school and was actually Val Kilmer's high school girlfriend.
Oh God, that would have been a great couple.
Oh wow. They're still friends. Val Kilmer went to Juilliard, but like whatever he did, he's the youngest person ever accepted to Juilliard. But
wow, good for him.
Yeah.
I watched his documentary recently.
I've been meaning to watch it. Was it good?
Was it good?
I gotta check it out just because I feel like it would be interesting. Yeah.
So she wasn't technically part of the Brat Pack, but she was Rob Lowe's girlfriend in that one, like this long suffering like girlfriend. So she went on to be like a character actress in lots of movies. And that's what I know. That's what I know about Mayor Winningham.
Great. Very good. Very good. Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a lot about Mayor Winningham.
Brat Pack Man.
Yeah. St. Elmo's Fire is the one that she's in. And she is, I believe she is the long suffering girlfriend of soprano saxophonist Rob Lowe's character in St. Elmo's Fire, which at that point in the 80s, like that was peak suffering, right? It was to be like, oh, my tortured saxophone boyfriend.
Was that like the inspiration for like Careless Whisper and The Lost Boys?
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah, I would like to think so.
Well, that's what I'm going with. Anybody ever asks.
Like bring back the saxophone solos, man.
Yeah, saxophone.
Yeah. It's a number 4 read, Dad. You gotta go get that. I'm gonna sound bad at the talent show. She was also in Miracle Mile, Turn and Hooch.
I love that movie.
She's in Mildred Pierce in 2011, Hatfields and McCoys in 2012. She has appeared on 4 seasons of American Horror Story.
She has.
Coven Season, Freak Show, Hotel, and Cult. And she's done a lot of off-Broadway work and some Broadway work. She was in Picnic. I'm not familiar with that show, but I assume, you know, there's probably food, some dancing, maybe some ants.
I think the picnic is inhabited by dead people.
Great. That's the best kind of picnic.
That fits with the later work and the FX shows, yeah?
Yes.
So Mary Winningham's career begins as a singer-songwriter. In 1976 and 77, she appears on The Gong Show singing The Beatles' Here, There, and Everywhere.
Wow.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? That's pretty wild stuff. Yeah, so good stuff. Mary Winningham, she was also in Wyatt Earp.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, with Kevin Costner. Yeah.
The bad Wyatt Earp movie that came out in the same year as Tombstone.
The Tombstone.
Yeah, the long,
boring Kevin Costner one. Yes, that one.
The one that didn't have Val Kilmer in it. Like, come on, what are you doing?
Yeah. Battle of the High School Exes.
Oh man, that's funny.
That's a good point right there.
They're just always doing that, right? They're like, oh, I'm gonna be in the same movie that you're being in.
Yeah,
she was in a film called Strange Mathematics at the same time that Val Kilmer. No, it didn't happen. So great job. Dave, 1 point. Monica, 2 points. And now it's time to play our third game. We're gonna play How Many Brats?
Damn right.
So I'm going to name a film.
Okay.
And you're going to tell me how many Brat Pack members were in that film. And if you can tell me which ones were in it, it's going to be even pointier in the points column.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, Dave, number one, Blue City. Blue City.
Brat
Pack members are in that movie.
And we're talking just like Brat Pack proper, not...
Core Pack. Core Brats.
Core Pack.
Yeah. None of the folks that are like periphery, John Cryers,
no brat hangers on.
Yeah, it's like get out of here, 2.5 men, dude. We don't need this.
John Cryer,
exactly.
Blue City. I'm gonna go with 2 Brat Packers.
Okay, very good.
And I'm gonna say that they're Emilio Estevez and Andrew McCarthy.
All right. Well, 2 is correct, but neither of them were in it. Monica, can you guess which 2 were in Blue City?
I'm gonna go with Judd Nelson and Blue City. Judd Nelson and Anthony Michael Hall.
Judd Nelson was one of them. Very good.
Demi Moore?
It was Ally Sheedy.
Oh,
I was gonna say Ally Sheedy, but I was like, no.
Okay. Yep. All right. Monica, number 2.
Okay.
And this one, you're probably going to know how many right off the bat, but you're going to have to name them to get the extra points.
Yeah.
So the film is St. Elmo's Fire. How many Brat Pack members are in that movie?
Okay. Oh, shit. Let me think who's in that movie. Judd Nelson is in that movie. Rob Lowe, but he's not a Brat Packer. Mary Winningham, though she's not technically a Brat Packer. Demi Moore is in that, although she's not technically a Brat Packer. Emilio Estevez was in there, so that's 2 Brat Packers. And I don't think Molly Ringwald was in that one. So I'm going to say 2 Brat Packers.
Okay. Technically, based on my research, Rob Lowe and Demi Moore are both Brat Packers.
Oh, okay.
They both count canonically because of this film. So you've named 4.
Okay.
Do you think there are any more Brat Packers in this movie, or are you sticking with 4?
Not that I know of.
Okay. All right. I'm going to give you a point for the ones you named. Dave.
You said Emilio, Rob Lowe, Demi Moore, and Judd Anthony Nelson. Michael. And Judd Nelson. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, then who's left? Andrew McCarthy.
Oh,
got
yes,
it. McCarthy is in it.
Molly Ringwald, Ally Sheedy.
Sheedy.
Not Ringwald, though.
Not Ringwald, but yeah, and McCarthy then, and Sheedy were the extra 2.
Yeah, and Mayor Winningham.
And Mayor Winningham, who's not adjacent.
Who's adjacent.
6 total Brat Pack members in St. Elmo's Fire. Estevez, Lowe, McCarthy, Moore, Nelson, and Sheedy.
Okay.
Pretty crazy. All right. Dave, number 3, Weird Science.
Weird Ooh. Science.
How many Brat Packers?
Oh, gosh. I know Emilio Estevez. Kelly LeBrock was not a Brat Packer. And she also looked like she was like 15 years older than Anthony Michael Hall in that movie, which I think was. I'm going to say two were in that movie. One being Anthony Michael Hall, and I can't remember the other person, but I can't remember the other folks in it.
Anthony Michael Hall is the correct one who is in it. There is one Brat adjacent in the movie also.
Who's the adjacent? Oh, maybe Monica knows.
Does Monica know?
Who was the adjacent? It was the guy that was, for some reason, I want to say, the other kid that was with him in the movie, and I just named him. Oh gosh, I can't remember.
Was it the dude Cusack. That was in Weekend? Was
I want to say Cusack, but it's not probably not right. It's not Cusack.
It's not Cusack. No. What's that guy's name? I know who you're thinking of, Dave. The guy from Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah, but that's not Andrew McCarthy.
yes. What is his name? Shoot. He had numerous NBC sitcoms in the 90s also. Yeah.
He played that same character in every movie. He was just like
Yeah.
What is his name? I'm looking it up. You are thinking of Jonathan Silverman. And it is not Jonathan Silverman.
Jonathan Silverman! Yes! Oh, I loved him. He was cute.
The adjacent Brat in Weird Science is Robert Downey Jr.
Get out of town. Yes! Fuck, yes! Okay.
All right. Oh. Number four, War Games.
Ooh.
How many Brats?
Ooh. Oh, gosh. So Matthew Broderick was in War Games. And shall we play a game? They almost set off in a nuclear bomb. I'm trying to think. I'm going to go with zero because I don't remember any Brat Packers in that movie.
Okay. Dave, how many Brats?
One, and that was Ali Sheedy.
That's correct. Oh, shit. It was Ali Sheedy.
Mm-hmm.
Sheedy and it wasn't up. Yeah, it wasn't the War Games with the chimpanzee, though. There was another War Games movie with the chimpanzee.
Yeah.
What was that one called?
The one with the chimp?
Yeah. It was like a similar plot where it's like, you know, the computer and like nuclear war, but there was a chimp involved.
It's not, it wasn't Lawnmower Man, right? Because I mean, there's a chimp involved in that.
Yeah,
it's Lawnmower Man. No, that was like,
it was way less psychedelic and freaky than Lawnmower Man.
And it's not Monkey Shines, because that's also about.
No, not horror. It doesn't really do that. I'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
All right. Yeah, it'll come to you. Great job on how many Brats. Dave gets 4 points. Monica gets 2 points. And now from the makers of Pomme ou Pomme de Terre, it's La Chose Française Arbitraire. That's the arbitrary French thing. And the only thing that's French about it is the name.
Okay.
So we're all one type of kid or another. We learned this from the Breakfast Club. So I ask each of you, do you consider yourself a brain, an athlete, a basket case, a princess, or a criminal? And why?
Can I go with basket case brain?
Yeah, I mean, you can make a hybrid if you want to.
Can I? I'll make myself a hybrid because unlike Brian in the Breakfast Club, who was, you know, relatively quote unquote normal, setting off the fire alarm because he couldn't win in shop, do that lamp in shop. I also was much more Ali Sheedy in that like really weird kind of person in the background. So I was like
making dandruff really fart and stuff.
Yeah, I was really weird, but I was also smart. So I'll go with that.
Right on. Okay, that's a great answer, Dave. Dave, what kind of person are you?
You know, I mean, I always wanted to be the athlete or the criminal, and I tried to just like have that. Je ne sais quoi of Judd Nelson, probably in my early 20s, but I was really just the brain in high school. You know, I went to my classes. I was always a year ahead in a couple things.
Aww.
I didn't cause too many problems, you know.
Yeah.
But then when I did, I was just like, I was in detention for a week and I shouldn't be here. Mom's mad because the principal called.
Yeah.
And then like years down the road, she's like, I'm sorry I overreacted. That was a kind of stupid thing you got detention for. Yeah.
Right?
No, it was a really fun, like, you know, come together moment at like 33 or 34. And my mom was like, oh, maybe I was a little hard on you on some of those things. You were pretty easy kid.
You were a pretty good kid. Yeah, like, yeah, you think?
Yeah, I'm like, I know. Have you met my sister?
Right. Yeah. And then you brought out your guitar and you started playing on the songs you wrote because of the trauma your mom caused you.
Yeah, that's right. I'm like, I'm mad at my mom.
Original
and then emo. 45 minute guitar solo.
Yeah.
These are my tears, mom.
But then I play them for her because I'm like, I still want her approval on things. That's
oh yeah, no, she still has to think it's a hit because otherwise, like, then yeah. It's just double heartbreak.
You know, Catholic, Italian. Oh man.
Yeah, you can't get away with anything.
Can't get away from her opinion at all.
Yeah, talking with your hands, feeling guilty about everything.
Madonna.
Yeah, I was definitely the brain too because, one, obviously, I'm hosting this podcast right now. But it was one of those things where I don't know, like I guess I kind of fit a little bit into everything. Like I played sports, but I was mostly just because I was an approachable nerd. I think a lot of the popular kids would tend to talk to me in class and be like, oh, hey, can I be your partner in chemistry? Because you seem to know what you're doing. And I sort of resigned myself like, all right, cool. I mean, yeah. I'll do everybody's work for them. I don't really care. Right. I'm just here to get this done. I gotta check in and check out, you know? And then that's what you do. We were built
here for
to
good
work
time,
in
not
this
a long
society.
Time.
Exactly. That's the motto of the brains there, Monica. Here for a good time, not a long time.
Yeah. We'll be leaving in 4 or less if I can do it. So great job on Les Shows Francais Arbitraire. I'm going to give you each 2 points. So we're going into the final topic. And yeah, and Monica, you're down by 1 point.
Shit.
Okay. Dave has 17. You have 16. So this final topic is really important. I think to your ego around maybe breaking Dave's beating you streak, which will extend to 2 if he completes this, he can shut this down.
That's right.
And I don't think you've lost this show, Monica, more than once in a row.
No, that was the only time I lost the show.
Yeah, yeah. So this is this creates a real just a trough problem. Yeah. Yeah. The fans, all the Monica fans out there are just wondering what's going to happen.
I should have gotten extra points for Mayor Winnie.
I'm going to go with nay on that.
Yeah, I can't think of another horse pun, but I wanted to. Yeah. Something about injecting horse medicine to not get COVID or to recover from COVID. That's a joke.
You know what Joe Rogan doesn't have? Worms.
It's true. It's true.
You know, he does have really weird nipples. I posted a picture of it on Facebook. And like, he has the weirdest fucking nipples. And I wish I'd never seen that in my life.
Yeah. And he's quite small. He's very tiny. He's wee.
Yeah. He's a little man with colorless nipples. They seem to just be the same color as the rest of his body.
And long. Like. And,
yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
take us on, you know. Spotify. Do it. Do it.
Oh man. Okay. So for the final topic, Dave, I'm going to give you first crack at this.
All right.
All right. Do you have a vague idea about the frat pack? The frat pack.
The frat pack. Oh my goodness. I have a vague idea about it, but I'll let Monica go. She wants to go first.
Okay, Monica, what do you know about the frat pack?
The frat pack was another name for those like Upper West Side rapists in New York City. You remember that they all got like, you know, they were all from like really wealthy upper class, like, you know, families, and they got, you know, like convicted of rape. That's what I know about the frat pack.
All right. Okay. It's a bold pronouncement. I'm into it. Okay, Dave, what's your vague idea about frat pack?
You know, the frat pack to me, I mean, given that if we're in the entertainment realm, I'm thinking, you know, a little more like the Entourage folks and a little Zac Efron thrown in there, maybe some Paul Walker, rest in peace. Mm-hmm. Not that great of an actor, though. He really is not that good.
Not a good driver either.
Oh.
Ooh, too soon, Nate.
It's been like 5 years. I don't know how much less soon it can be.
It's been a lot. So the frat pack there, and they were trying to capitalize on the brat pack, right? Which capitalized on the rat pack and all that, but it just didn't stick like the brat pack stuck. So, and it's kind of like what you said earlier there, Nate, about the pussy posse. So like, we're aware of them, but it doesn't really like grab us as much as the brat pack does. The frat pack grabs us even less unless it's against our will.
Oh yeah. And then the pussy posse comes in.
And then the pussy posse comes in. So maybe the frat pack is the pussy posse.
So I couldn't even tell you all the names of the frat pack because they're not the brat pack.
No,
they're not. They're just a group of people that I think you're all going to be surprised at how many of them you know when I list this. And you'll probably be surprised that this is the name that they gave themselves, because it is it's kind of wild. It is the group of comedy actors who appeared together in the highest grossing comedy movies since the mid-90s. It includes Ben Stiller, Owen and Luke Wilson, Will Ferrell, Steve Carell, Jack Black, Paul Rudd, and Vince Vaughn.
Them?
Yeah. What? Isn't that weird?
I forfeit. That's stupid.
That is stupid. Like, come on, dude.
They gave themselves that name?
Why wouldn't it be something to do with weed or something? That makes way more, I mean, Paul Rudd, I mean, I'm not going to hate anything about Paul Rudd.
Mm. But, I mean, I assume that all of the name comes from the movie Old School.
All day, every day, yeah.
And that's Old School.
I think it's just because they were all in Old School. That's it.
That makes sense.
And then it was like, oh, these guys are also all just billable, so we'll call them all the Frat Pack.
If you're marketing, that's a good
one. Well, come on. Yeah, that, I mean, I guess that makes sense because they were all high school buddies. Okay.
Yeah. In 2005, Details Magazine, remember magazines?
No,
they called Judd Apatow, Adam McKay, and Todd Phillips the Frat Packagers.
Man.
I mean, it makes sense because Adam McKay and Judd Apatow.
Yeah.
And we live in a society.
Right. We live in, so somebody has to, they have to name a thing, right? It can't
when that's the thing, we call them the Frat Packagers. Like, I understand why magazines failed.
Yeah. No, especially that one.
It's a stupid name. I mean, better do something with weed.
Great job. I'm going to give you each 1 point because you both had very thoughtful answers to this question.
It was incredibly vague, so thank you for that 1 point.
It was incredibly vague.
But oh man, this means that Monica, your losing streak extends to 2 because Dave has 18 points to your 17. So Dave, congratulations on winning this week's episode of A Vague Idea.
Well, that's what happens when you're a man in motion.
Great, and we'll cut there.
No, we will not. Because I want to rant after this happened. This is my unwanted Oscar speech for this win. So I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna tell Nate and Monica that the Brat Pack's cool just by GIF. And then I'm sitting at the dive bar, as I do. I look up, they're playing MTV Classic, and I'm like, okay, who's this weirdo with a mullet and a guitar? And then all of a sudden, Rob Lowe shows up and Judd Nelson shows up and all that. I'm like, oh my God, that's that one song that I can't think of at all. And so then I'm like, go home. I'm like, what's the song with the guys? And then St. Elmo's Fire by John Parr. Great. What you should do. Yeah. That song is awful. That's all I got to say about it. You listen to it again and then watch the video, go to YouTube, treat yourself and watch John Parr sing Almost Fire and then be like, oh, that's bad.
What's the other song John Parr sang? Like he had another like pretty big song.
I don't know. I for some reason, I feel like John Parr is just like Jack Parr's nephew or something. And so he got to be a musician for no good reason.
It is replacement level.
His only other single is a 1984 US number 6 rock single titled Naughty Naughty.
Oh, it's very rapey.
It sounds like if you're saying naughty twice in the title,
yeah,
you're probably not. You're probably not.
And
it's this is a man. This is a man who's gonna rape you.
Mullet-tastic, that guy.
That's a man who's gonna rape you.
Now look at that. We don't want to be sued by John Parr or his people. So
yeah. No, he don't. And I'm sure John Parr is allegedly a wonderful person.
Allegedly.
But allegedly a lot of things could be possible. Yeah. But St. Elmo's Fire is illegible trash.
Yeah.
Especially when, because
they were trying to recreate Simple Minds. Don't you forget, they were trying to recreate a great soundtrack.
Oh my God. Yeah. They said, here's the thing, make the commercial for the movie. The one thing you have to do is say St. Elmo's Fire. And he's like, oh, you got it.
I'm doing it. I'll say it. I'll sing it upwards of 45 times in this song.
Nate, if you could put that as the bumper music out on this.
Going higher.
I imagine John Parr probably needs $3 or $4. So
I might be able to track down a 15 second fair use segment of it. I think it's interesting too, because it's like, I don't know, you had so many more talented people, especially with saxophone. Like, there's a song called Baker Street that I'm sure.
Oh, Jerry Rafferty.
But yeah, fucking Jerry Rafferty. Like, that's a way better song to throw into St. Elmo's Fire based on what St. Elmo's Fire is about. And then it features the saxophone than the song St. Elmo's Fire, right? Which is like arbitrary garbage.
Yeah. He's like, here's some words in the synthesizer riff.
Yeah.
I'll take my check.
When instead it could have been a mournful lament about trying to get by in the city. And discover meaning.
Trying to get clean, man.
Yeah, it's all about that. Anyway, great. So, Dave, anything you'd like to plug?
Oh, what I want to plug. Given the times that we're in, I imagine whenever somebody hears this, we're still going to be the same time. So get vaccinated. Mm-hmm. It's free. It's safe. It's simple. Don't take horse dewormer.
Don't do it.
Just get vaccinated.
This is a comedy podcast for entertainment purposes only.
That's right. COVID-19 thing coming up, the information here. What I'm saying is that what you should do, take the vaccine, be kind, stay hydrated, keep your phones charged, and love one another.
Beautiful. Yes, I agree. And yeah, if you're going to take the horse dewormer, at least opt out of going to the hospital when you inevitably fall ill with it, because you're taking up beds other people need.
Yeah. 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 Very true.
Monica, anything you'd like to plug? I'm sorry you didn't win this week.
I think history and people who read this podcast are going to figure out that I was robbed.
So. It's possible. I want to plug anybody
who's listening to this, spam Nate's podcast page and be all like,
yeah, you can tweet at me at Nate Regolia on Twitter. #Monica1. That's fine.
Regolia and say Monica was robbed.
Yeah. I'm down with that. Click link, subscribe, listen. And do it.
Clearly knew everything about the Brat Pack.
So. You knew a lot.
Yeah, you did. I mean, really, it came down to the difference in I See What You Did There. That's the thing. That's the thing that broke.
Mm,
I know.
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see what I did there? I rigged the game against you.
I don't have anything. I don't have anything to plug. I think, wear a mask. Even if you are vaccinated, wear a mask. I wear a mask at Hall & Oates the whole time. It's fine.
Songs still sounded good.
If you brush your teeth, you don't have to worry about, any unwanted smells.
Still, masks have the advantage of you can make faces at strangers without them knowing what you're doing.
Yeah, so you can Ooh. Look like you're smiling at them, and in reality you're like, fuck you, I hope you die.
Yeah, you can smize and fuck you at the same time, and it's great.
Exactly. So
I'm doing it a lot with traffic. I love it. You're walking down the street, they don't know what you're saying to them.
Nothing to plug, but just be kind.
Yeah, agreed. Let's be better people. Let's at least try to do something that's good for everyone instead of just something that's good for each individual person who has a lot of money, who's making the decisions. It's a wild idea. I know it's crazy.
Exactly, because the corporations aren't going to take care of you. They're going to let you die.
Yeah. Once you stop being a customer, they no longer care that you exist. And that's something that we have to remember as we run out of resources and habitable planet and we're all locked in cages and forced to give birth against our will and such. Like, you know, you gotta consider that. Yeah. Thank you both so much for being on the show again. This is
Thank
great.
You,
so
Nate.
Much fun to see you.
You are the most wonderful host.
Coming from you, Dave, too, that is very high praise, because I've admired your hosting ability for a long time. And, yeah. So thank you.
I will join you on this anytime you want. And great. Monica, too.
All the time. Good to see Dave.
Yeah.
Always good to see you, too.
Oh, and Dave met the fella.
Oh, good.
I met the fella.
Oh, yeah. I need to meet the fella before we leave the city.
He is incredibly smiley. I love that about him.
I feel like all he's the photos you've ever posted of the fella, he is
elated. Yeah, he's incredibly smiley. He's incredibly touchy-feely, which normally I don't mind, but I'm like, I was at trivia, and I was like, fuck this. Like, leave me alone, dude.
I'm here to answer questions and sing Golden Girls. I'm you get off my back.
Yeah, and I'm all out of gum.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I love you, but like, you don't understand how incredibly competitive I am at this trivia.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I have to say, too, you posted a status also where the fella said something like, does it seem like the world is ending to you?
Yeah, you know, we were walking our dog this morning. He just turned to me and he was just all like, does it feel like we're witnessing the end of civilization? And I said, yes.
Yeah. And it sure does.
Yes.
So yeah, I can't wait to meet him, because I want to meet this smiley, nuanced individual, because it reminds me of myself a little bit, where I'm like, I'm very smiley, but I'm also I'm also contemplating the end times.
Yeah, smiling. You're smiling nihilist.
We're smilists. I love it.
Nihilist. Yeah,
smilism. There is nothing, and you should be happy about it.
No.
Oh man. Thank you again.
Thank
listeners,
you.
If you like this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. That really helps us out. Any platform, we're on everything. Find us. You already found us if you're listening to this. Hit the stars. Type a little words. Whatever. You can listen to our other shows, too. We have Roll for Blank Streets of Mage, which is our Dungeons & Dragons podcast that is just rolling into this fun second season. And then we also have two other shows, Funky Spunk, our Sex and the City podcast, which remains on hiatus, and the Hard Pick Mining Company, which talks about the Denver Nuggets, also on hiatus. But basketball is coming back soon. You gotta wait for 3 weeks of football and then you get some basketball again. So that's pretty exciting. And otherwise, I think it, really, like, you guys hit it. All of my perspective is, hey, just please get vaccinated, because we know it's safe and we really literally cannot finish this. We cannot finish and go play games until we clear our plates. And we're not going to clear our plates if we keep fucking around. So yeah, so that's my request to you. You know, amen. I'm sure you have a good reason why you didn't do it. Nobody's going to hate you for being cautious or concerned or whatever. But, you know, recognize that the only way that we get to the herd immunities that we've got, so that people can luxuriously not get a polio vaccine, is by everybody doing it for a very long period of time first. Let's get
that. And at this point, millions and millions of people are fine.
Yes, so, millions and millions of people are fine. Millions and millions of people around the world are waiting to get a chance to have these vaccines. We have a wealth of them and we're hogging them and wasting them. And it's all because we're quibbling over a lot of stuff that isn't even really real. But, you know, I know it's more complicated than that, but hey, we're going to try. We're going to try just saying please and thank you in advance. We have all had a vague idea about the Brat Pack this week. And that is a good thing, because the devil is in the details. Goodbye.
Love you.
Bye. That was so fun.
A Vague Idea is written and produced by me, Nate Rigolia, with Shannon Page, and sometimes John Peros. Information about topics often come from Wikipedia, so hey, why not donate a bit to that? Sound effects are Creative Commons public domain. If you like this podcast, tell a few people, and subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. And if you happen to like reading science fiction, check out the small press I started with my friend Sean Brokowski. You can find Spaceboy Books at readspaceboy.com.